My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hi, everyone. We are the hosts of Like Mother, Like Murder, a true crime momcast.
You heard that right. We are a momcast, which is our unique twist in the true crime world.
What sets us aside is that our content is mainly mom-related, from missing moms to murdered moms.
To moms who committed the crime, survivors, and more.
We are getting started on our third season with over 100 episodes that you guys can go and binge. I am Rachel.
And I'm Heather. We drop new episodes every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts, at Like Mother,
Like Murder.
Most of you that listen weekly know that I don't go into my life, blah, 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 very much, just to kind of keep the chit chat to a minimum and get to the story. However, today I am kind of breaking that rule. I have this group of women friends that I have known since we were all in like about the second grade. After high school, we kind of lost touch for a little while, but we have been back in touch for the last probably 18 years or so. So we are a very honest bunch and I love them very dearly. There are four of us all together. We get together about once every 2 months to bitch, gossip, and collaborate on our individual neuroses. And on July 20th, one of us, Leslie, lost her battle with cancer. I probably don't have to tell you how crushing her loss is for us, but the loss is much greater for her husband and her boys, so I'm not here to make it about myself. I was very fortunate back when I started my exclusive or Patreon account that she co-hosted an episode with me, and I just want to take this time to share with all of you the amazing and wonderfulness of Leslie. A person's voice is often the first thing that kind of floats away from our memories, and I don't know, I just feel like her voice and her thoughts are worth sharing. So I hope that you enjoy today's exclusive freebie, and Leslie, if you are listening too, I love you. I miss you already. And thank you for being my friend. It was truly an honor.
I'm doing things a little differently this episode. I have my very dear friend Leslie with me, who we've known each other, I think, since about third grade. And I really want to share this story with her while sharing it with you because it's a bit of a head scratcher. So hello, Leslie.
Hello, Kim. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm excited to do this. So now you yourself, you're not a big true crime fan, right? But you've been kind of turned on lately by podcasts by me and who are kind of the other part of our crew.
Let's say it, Kim. The reason that I'm enjoying podcasts is because I enjoy listening to yours.
Oh, listen to you just buttering me up. You know, I already have your Christmas gift, but I still haven't given you yet.
That's right, exactly. That's the key. You haven't given it to me yet.
That's right. You've got to keep me in your good graces. Now, you were the one that suggested a couple of cases that I did. You didn't suggest the cases specifically, but you wanted to hear someone who maybe kind of deserved it. And so that was the Father Roger Mattasoli story. And then somebody who turned out they weren't dead. And that was the Natasha Ryan story. So if you like those, you have Leslie to thank for them. And if you didn't like them, then it's still her fault.
And is this one special for me as well, Kim?
Well, it is and it isn't. It's one that I just don't want to tell it alone. Like, I feel like it needs to be shared and discussed as we go because it is just such an unusual case. So today's case has actually been on my brain since about 2010, when I kind of stumbled across this video on YouTube about it. I think it was a documentary about it. And I'm going to try and put links in the show notes to a video, but I don't have rights to it. So it might be hard to find one that's kind of like a free game one, but I'll try and do that. But you have to get ready because this is a really bizarre one. And one that a lot of the listeners might have heard of, especially if they listen to international podcasts and that. But I, rather than trying to anticipate what some people know and which ones are new to them, I just realized that a lot of the listeners are a lot like me. If a case interests them, they will just listen to a number of podcasts that cover it. So just trying to get a different take on it. So today is just me retelling of a very intriguing story. This is the murder of Glenns Hollingshead. Now, I know you're probably confused because that's not really the information that I gave you at the beginning to kind of look into a little bit. Once again, very little is written or known publicly about the victim in this case, Glenn Hollingshead, before his murder. All I really know, and believe me, I looked and looked and looked, is that Glenn was 54 on the day of his murder and a licensed paramedic living alone in a place in England called Stoke-on-Tent, which is an area of Staffordshire, is that all the locals just call Stoke. And it's home to the pottery industry. He enjoyed his ale and possessed a very willingness to help anyone in need. And he had been a member of the Royal Air Force back in the day. And I also know that he had a brother named Gary and another brother named Paul and a dog. And that is literally all I know about him. But we like Glenn. Glenn is a good guy.
Okay.
But before we get to Glenn, we have to go back to a couple of days before his murder on May 17th, 2008. And on that day, two twin sisters, Ursula and Sabina Erickson, boarded a bus traveling from Liverpool to London. There also isn't a whole lot of backstory on the twins, but from what I could dig up, they were both born in Sweden in 1967, had very normal childhood. And then in around the year 2000, when they were about 33, they each moved on separately. So Ursula moved down to the U.S., I believe in the Washington area. And Sabina, who was living common law with her partner and two children, moved to County Cork, Ireland. And then as children, of course, they being twins, they were inseparable. They had that kind of that tight twin bond thing. So I'm not exactly sure what circumstances would have led them to live later in completely separate countries, but they did. But they visited and talked to each other quite a bit, like very often. It's also important to note here that on this day in 2008, they were 41 years old. There had been no history of any criminal behaviors or mental health issues with either of the twins.
Right. Okay. Noted.
Okay. On the morning before, so the Friday the 16th, Ursula flew to County Cork, Ireland to visit her sister. But Sabina and her partner had a really bad fight on the evening that Ursula arrived. And it must have been a pretty doozy of a fight because Ursula and Sabina secretly left Ireland in the wee early hours on the 17th and caught a ferry over to Liverpool, England. They got in around 8:30 in the morning. So that was on the Saturday. Now, Sabina didn't bring her little peanuts with her. So the pair headed directly from the ferry over to St. Anne's police station and reported to them that she had concerns over the welfare of her two children that she'd left behind in Ireland. So the Liverpool police contacted the Dublin police, and that's kind of how they learned about this fight that they had had. So maybe her partner had already put in a missing persons report, but that would just be conjecture on my part. But the Dublin police reported that everything was fine with the kids, so everything's good. Now, I don't know whether or not the twins were relieved to hear that or they didn't believe it. Who knows? So what they did after that is they got on a National Express bus at 11:30 in the morning that was traveling from Liverpool to London on the M6 motorway. Why they decided to on London to go to, no one really knows. They didn't have any family there. There's really no reason for them to specifically pick London. For boarding the bus, the driver was, you know how when you get on a bus going somewhere like that, the bus will, or the driver wants to put your bags underneath the storage compartment?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't letting him do that. They were holding these bags really tight to them, and they were kind of becoming almost belligerent about it, like clutching their bags tightly to them. So the driver at that time was a little bit suspicious of them, but let them get on the bus anyways.
Okay.
But so during the trip, the bus made this unscheduled stop right around 1 p.m. at the Kiel service station. Now, there's varying reports on why this stop was made. But the one that I'm going to go with is that the twins' behavior had become a bit unruly. They were acting a little bit odd and erratic. And so he'd already been suspicious about them and the whole luggage thing. So he stopped and pulled them from the bus and refused to let them reboard. And the manager, Melissa Dutton, of the service station was watching from her post, also found them to be suspicious and odd and called the police on them. But when the police came, they didn't think anything was that off about them. Maybe they were a little quirky, but they seemed pretty harmless. But the driver said, no way, I'm not letting them back on my bus. So the police gave them the number for the bus company and then told them to arrange to get on the next bus. Okay. Are you with me so far?
Yeah, I'm with you so far.
Any comments, any questions?
No, it's just, it's very strange so far. I'm trying to... I mean, two people aren't generally acting bizarrely together, right?
Right.
I mean, normally these sorts of things are one person. So to have the two of them acting bizarrely seems very strange. Is there any drugs involved or anything in this?
Well, we will get to that a little bit later.
Okay.
Whether there was drugs or not. But like the only thing I can think at this point is that, okay, so Sabina's the one with the two kids. And the sort of husband or boyfriend, whatever, that she's left. So she, I can understand that she would be under some stress, maybe. Like perhaps she's fleeing an abusive relationship, or she just, I don't know. I don't know why you would pack up and go from Ireland. Like, and again, we don't know anything, right? So we don't know, or was the plan that that Ursula was going to come and then this was what they were going to do and they had all this planned out? We just don't know. But so far, it's odd.
Right.
It's an odd trip. It's not your usual vacationing around London. Mm-hmm. So instead of arranging to get on the next bus, they start walking down the median of this very busy M6 highway, which has a speed limit of about 70 kilometers an hour, which is about 45 miles per hour. So that would be like Anderson, maybe, like busy, though, like really busy.
Yeah, Quebec just came back from the UK and we were on those motorways and they are busy and a lot of big trucks and very fast and a lot of lanes. So so walking around on there would have been really dangerous.
Yeah, so even though they're in the median and there's like, you know, that sort of like guardrails on the side, you shouldn't be walking along there. So this is around 3:20 in the afternoon. And of course, as I had mentioned in the Tia Sharp story, England, of course, has tons of CCTV cameras. So they're actually seen walking on this motorway and they are being kept out of traffic by those barriers along there, but they're still not in a great place.
Right.
So the CCTV operators dispatched the highway agency patrol unit to go and get them off the highway. So these are more like bylaw officers rather than cops. So they sort out traffic when there's an accident and that kind of thing. They're not there to write tickets necessarily. They're just there to keep traffic flowing.
Okay.
But when the twins see this patrol car coming towards them, they suddenly leave the median and then just run into traffic. And cars are swerving and braking all over the place. Chaos is ensuing. And during this, Sabina was actually clipped by a car and fell over, but she got up and she just kept running. So the police, you've been there, so you know the rate of speed these cars are going. This is a Volkswagen that clipped her.
No, even being clipped by a car, you've still been hit by a car. I stubbed my toe, that hurts, right? If you get clipped by a car, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, but she kept running.
Okay.
So, of course, the police and a paramedic is called to defuse the situation and to see if Sabina needs any kind of medical care. And it just so happened that the particular police car that was dispatched was being followed by a TV crew for traffic cops, which is like a UK version of cops. So what happened next is all caught on camera and in full detail.
Okay.
As you know, because you've watched the video.
I watched the video and I was wondering why there was a TV crew there. So thank you for explaining that, because that was a bit confusing to me.
It was kind of an amazing coincidence that this would happen, because this isn't something that happens often in England. I don't think it's ever happened since. So when the officers and this TV crew arrived, so by that time, everything had calmed down and everyone's just, for the most part, safely out of the way of traffic on the shoulder. And Sabina and Ursula are smoking cigarettes. They're chatting very amicably with the Highbury patrol officers, almost like nothing strange had just happened.
What we've got is they were in the central res.
Why?
So no.
Exactly.
Oh, they speak English?
One speaks English, are you? The one in the red.
Yeah.
We had a block coming up.
Right.
Because we knew they were on camera.
A full closure?
They're on camera. Full closure northbound.
Yeah.
They were trying to cross the Bravos. As we approached, they hadn't seen this model. The red one got knocked down by the red car over there, but an ambulance en route for it. She seems all right, but I'm not a doctor. She has been knocked down.
Is she the one that speaks English or the other one?
Yes. The other
one. Okay.
Now, both women are wearing, they both have visors on. So Sabina's is sporting the words "time to believe," and she's got a long red coat. And Ursula is in a yellow rain, like kind of like a rain jacket, but the green sweater underneath. And as the police chief is getting up to speed on what just kind of went down, something even stranger happens.
Oh, no!
Night Council, we need ambulance.
Ursula turns away from the officer, and the officer instinctively reached for her, like for her coat. But her coat slipped off her shoulders and she made her way almost kind of like walking, not quite a run, into traffic, where she's immediately literally smoked by an oncoming truck clocking in at about 90 kilometers an hour or 56 miles per hour. And the truck ran straight over her, crushing her legs.
Okay.
Now, seconds later, Sabina also runs out, but it's so strange. She doesn't like, you know how if something like that, instinctively you go running towards that person?
Right.
She kind of runs almost in the other direction from where her sister's actually laying. And she's struck by a sedan and goes straight onto the windshield, actually bending the glass inwards, and bounces off into the air, slamming hard onto the road, landing on her side, and she's now unconscious.
Just to say, we've got two possible fatals.
So again, we've seen the footage. It's incredible. I don't know how anybody can survive these kinds of hits at that speed.
So me having only watched the video, I haven't done any research or anything. I've been relying on you to explain all of this to me. Watching the video, I wasn't clear on whether they were running into traffic with the hopes of being hit by something, or if they were just blindly running into traffic. I couldn't tell from the video whether the goal was to be struck by a vehicle.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I didn't really look at it.
Do you know the answer to that?
No, nobody knows the answer.
Okay.
What the plan was, if this was like a suicide pact.
Right.
Or if they were under the influence of something. Like, at this point, nobody knows. They're just flabbergasted that these two have just run out into the road.
Right.
It's okay. No, stay where you are. Stay.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Oscar Tango 3-3 on arrival. Both females have run out into the carriageway.
First female has been hit by HGV in lane 2, serious injury. Second female has been hit by a whole vehicle in lane 1, but two serious casualties. Renee Air Amsler.
So somehow they are both still breathing. And so the officers run out to attend to both of them. Like there's a few officers there, I think about six of them. Ursula had compound fractures of both legs. So they were literally crushed. But despite her incredible injuries, she wasn't just alive, but she's now yelling and swearing and spitting at the officers that are trying to help her.
No, come on, my love. Come on, you've hit your head. Calm down. We are the police. We are the police. Calm down. Yeah, the doctor's en route. It's okay. Calm down. She appears very disorientated.
And another officer is with Sabina, who was unconscious.
Trying to make sure you're okay. Right. Where's Paul? Oh, shit. Where's Paul?
But she starts to rouse and is now trying to get up and yelling, they're going to steal your organs. And she manages to stand up and is now trying to walk away, like almost like nothing happened.
Yeah.
Stay. Oh, why do you feel me? Stay still.
Why do you feel me?
But when they try to get her to lay back down, wait for the ambulance to take her, she starts getting aggressive and actually punched one of the female officers in the face, knocking her down, and then took off to the other side of the highway, now fortunately not getting hit again.
Stay there, calm down.
And the officers, a total of six of them, including onlookers, give chase.
Yeah.
And when they catch up to her, she strips off her coat and she's dancing around like a prize fighter who's like psyching himself up for a fight.
Right.
So they finally managed to get her sedated. So they put her in an ambulance. And she's still screaming and carrying on and trying to kick and punch the people that are helping her.
Calm down. They're high or
chill.
Something. Calm down. We're police. Police. Right, we get her down. Get her down. We get her handcuffed from behind. It's not this.
What, we're doing it.
Now, on the phone down. Turn on the phone now.
Over. That way toward.
Sitting base, what's it? Go. Roll her forward, Swan. And back.
So that's kind
of on the video. The one officer mentions just how strong she was, just how they like she had this superhuman strength, and she was the way she was fighting and kicking.
Right. And so your first thoughts are drugs.
That's my first thought for sure.
Yeah, and that would be mine too. And something pretty powerful, like PCP or some, I don't know drugs, but something that's like up there as far as, I mean, that's not weed, right?
Right. No, she wasn't just having a Slurpee and a bag of chips. No.
No, yeah, right. So traffic's tied up for a total of 4 hours before they were able to get them, you know, into an ambulance and going. And of course, there's tons of onlookers and everything like that. And they all believe it has to be some kind of drug, like maybe meth or something, or that it was like some weird suicide pact, right?
Okay.
So the police at the scene, they searched the bags, these bags that they were hanging on so tightly to on the bus, and found a number of cell phones, one of the woman's passports, but no other ID or personal items other than a laptop. So okay. That's what they were hanging on to so tightly, right? Now, both twins arrived at the hospital, and Ursula was in critical condition, so they had arrived by air ambulance. Sabina, by that time, had calmed down completely again and miraculously was not seriously injured. But weirdly, she never asked about Ursula And the only thing that they quoted her as saying is, quote, "We say in Sweden that an accident rarely comes alone. Usually at least one more follows, maybe two." But she certainly wasn't acting aggressively. And she's now chatting and almost kind of joking around with the staff. Now, she was seen by a couple of doctors, and they didn't see anything alarming about her behavior. Now, whether she ever gave anybody an explanation for what the heck they were doing, I don't know. It is never reported on if she ever gave an explanation, but it doesn't sound like it. But it sounds like they couldn't find any injuries really on her. And she's talking and everything's fairly normal now. So now, for reasons that no one has ever really figured out, she was not given a psych evaluation at the hospital, like an actual psych evaluation, other than a couple of doctors talking to her.
Right.
And this was after they had done a tox screen on Ursula and found that there were no drugs of any kind in her system.
Wow. Okay.
No drugs. And they're 41-year-old women, too. So it's not like they're young kids, you know, that might have been partying or whatever. So that to me is really strange. So there'd be no drugs in the system.
And their behavior was that bizarre.
Yeah. And no history of mental illness or any of these kinds of episodes. Because later, they actually pull their medical records and everything from Sweden, from their child. There's nothing. You know, she didn't have any injuries that required treatment. So the police, all they do is charge her with assaulting an officer and trespassing. And she goes to court that next morning, early the next morning, and she was sentenced to one day in jail, which she had already kind of served because she'd been in custody since she'd been brought to the hospital the night before.
Yeah.
So this woman, who is clearly moving in and out of some kind of psychosis, is just released from the hospital to go about her merry way with this little plastic bag with her laptop and a little bit of cash in it, having had no evaluation of her mental state or have, that we know of, given any logical or even illogical reason for having run into traffic.
Well, because when they were talking to her, she seemed very lucid, right?
Right. But
they didn't ask for an explanation as to why she was not acting in a rational manner just a short time before.
Yeah. And to me, that's the part that's strange. Like, I get, like, well, right. I don't know. I mean, do people move in and out of psychosis that quickly?
Hmm.
Like, I thought from other cases that I've researched where somebody's, you know, had this type of issues, and like, yes, you can go in and out of it, but I didn't think that quickly.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, she's released. No evaluation, nothing like that. Now, at least Ursula, because she required surgery and a bit of a longer stay for some rehabilitation, she was actually sectioned under the UK Mental Health Act and held for 3 months, but not Sabina. Yeah. Okay. And again, because it's medical history on Ursula, we don't have a lot of that. We just know that she was sectioned and held there. Now, the 3 months could have mostly been just trying to get over her injuries, because she probably would have had to do quite a bit of physical therapy. Whether or not she required it under the Mental Health Act at that time, I don't know. Sabina, after she left the courthouse, she's now for some reason wearing her sister's green sweater, but she's calm and she doesn't even seem to really understand that her sister Ursula is still in the hospital. So she's just kind of wandering around looking for her, like not looking for her, expecting her to be on the street, but like she kind of comprehends that there's been an accident and that she's looking for her sister. And of course, she's not familiar with London. She doesn't know the area or anything. So she's really just kind of spending the day wandering around.
Okay.
So what does all of this have to do with Glenn Hollingshead from the beginning of the story?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, around 7 p.m. that night, she's still wandering around and she winds up in Stoke-on-Tent. And Glenn Hollingshead and his buddy Peter Molloy were walking on the other side of the street and were coming back to Glenn's house from having a pint at the pub and walking Glenn's dog. And Sabina calls to them from the other side of the street, something like, "Hey, I like your dog." And so she comes over and she starts petting the dog and chatting with the two men. Now, Peter later testified that Sabina seemed friendly but a bit anxious. And she told them that she was looking for her sister, that she'd had an accident, And she asked them if there were any bed of breakfast or any hotels in the area. And Glenn said, no. But now I choose to believe it's because Glenn is a very kind soul who liked to help people in need. He said, why don't you come to my place and rest for a bit and we'll call the hospitals and see if we can find where your sister is. But I mean, I don't know if you pulled any of the pictures, but from a woman's perspective, I personally think Sabina has a very severe case of resting bitch face. To a 54-year-old man, I don't think it's unimaginable that he might have found her attractive.
Right. Okay.
Did you pull any pictures of her?
No. And I couldn't, I don't think you gave me permission to do that.
Well, you could do that now if you have a chance, but she does have severe resting bitch face.
Okay, so you wouldn't think that she looked particularly approachable or...
She doesn't seem that way, but again, right. This Peter, he testifies that, no, she seemed friendly or whatever. I'm like, okay, oh. Like again, she's 41, he's 54. He might have found her attractive, but regardless, it doesn't matter. He didn't do anything creepy or pervy ever in her presence. Like, he's never been accused of anything like that. So she agrees and they kind of walk back and they're talking and just generally just super, super normal as the situation could be. Now, Glenn and Peter had obviously not watched the news the night before because they didn't recognize her. And back at Glenn's place, which is on Duke Street, he offers her a cup of tea and she starts to act a little bit odd again at this point. She's kind of continually peeking nervously out of the kitchen window. And then she offers them both cigarettes. But when they put them to their lips to light them, she snatches them back for them, saying they're probably poisoned. But then she lights one and smokes one herself. So at this point, Peter says to himself, you know what? I'm good. I'm out of here. And he left just before midnight.
Okay.
Now he later testified that in no way did Sabina act certainly like she'd ever been hit by a car 24 hours earlier. Mm-hmm. So no signs of being in pain, no limp, nothing like that. Now Glenn said that he recognized she was a bit odd, but he thought that she was a bit quirky and then just not to worry about it. So for reasons that only Glenn knows, he allows Sabina with her poisoned cigarettes to stay the night at his place. And the next morning, Glenn continued to make some calls for Sabina looking for her sister. And he actually called his brother, Paul, who worked at the university hospital, to ask him to try and find out what ward Ursula was in. And again, at this point, Sabina seems fine. She's not even the slightest bit strange. No more mentioning of the cigarettes or weird peeking out of the windows. And so that evening, around 7:30, he notices that they're out of tea bags. And so at that point, she'd been there at his house for about 24 hours, mostly pretty normal. Mm-hmm. So he went next door to ask his neighbor, Frank Booth, who was out washing his minivan for a couple of tea bags. And he said, sure, but can you just wait till I'm done and then I'll bring them over to you. So he turns around and he goes right back into the house and like seconds, maybe not even seconds, immediately comes back out hunched over and he's bleeding, telling Frank, she stabbed me. And then he collapses on the floor. And when Frank runs over to help him, all he said was, look after my dog for me. So he died before the paramedics got there from five stab wounds to his torso.
Wow.
Yeah. So as Frank was calling the police, Sabina ran out of the house and down the street. And now she's picked up on surveillance footage, right? Because, of course, cameras everywhere. But she's hitting herself in the head with a hammer. And not like a rubber mallet. A hammer.
Yeah.
And this poor passing motorist, Joshua Gradage, he saw her and he pulls over and tries to help her, thinking like she's just off her nut. And Sabina screams and whacks him over the head with a roof tile that she had in her pocket for some odd reason. This stuns this poor guy. Did you fall off on me? Oh, no, you're there.
No, I'm still here. No, I think it was the roof tile that made me sitting thinking, why does she have a roof tile? Like, where did she get the roof tile? Why does she have a roof tile? Sorry, I got hung up on the roof.
Well,
tile.
It was just a very strange thing. It would be interesting to go back through the investigation and see how long she had the roof tile in her pocket. Well, like, did she just pick it up? Or has she been
the same place she found the hammer, maybe, right? Maybe somebody was doing some construction. She finds a roof tile and a hammer.
Maybe she just
kind of strange.
Yeah, it is a strange weapon for sure.
It is. It is. Yeah. It just seems a strange thing. I mean, I know we carry purses with a lot of weird stuff in there, but reptiles are not usually in there.
Not usually, no.
Not usually.
So this, of course, stuns this poor guy. But by the time that Joshua had come across her, the paramedics in the area had already gotten the call to look for her and spotted her. And again, they give chase. And she manages to get to a place called Heron Cross. And there's a bridge there that went 40 feet over the A50 motorway, which she jumped from.
Of course she did. Obviously.
Which would have killed most people. But not Sabina. She instead broke her ankles, fractured her skull, and then was rushed to the University Hospital of North Staffordshire again. Now, she was tested again and found that she also had no traces of any drugs in her system. So
that is so strange.
It is. So as far as I could research, after Ursula was released from the hospital, so this is the other sister, sometime in September of 2008, so about 4 months after the incident, she temporarily went back to Sweden before returning to Washington, D.C., where she'd been before all of this. And she was released without any charges. And according to Vice, she's now a member of the Sacred Heart Church in Bellevue. But there's no reporting if Ursula attended Sabina's trial, but it doesn't appear so. Sabina was released from the hospital on September 11, 2008, and taken immediately into police custody to await her trial, which was supposed to begin in February of 2009. But there were some issues trying to get her medical records from home, like from back home in Sweden. So it was delayed until September of 2009. But the medical records they received didn't reveal any history of any issues, mental issues or disorders.
Right.
And so an investigation discovered that Sabina's DNA on a kitchen knife that had been used to kill Glenn. They also found her bloodstained jacket and a ring that she had taken off at Glen Spice.
Like there was no doubt it was her, right? I mean,
oh, yeah. No doubt whatsoever. Well, and all the CCTV footage.
Right.
But robbery obviously wasn't a motive because, like, even if she was lucid, because she took her own ring off and left it there. So, she wouldn't take anything with it. So she was originally charged with murder, but she took a plea and pled guilty to manslaughter by diminished capacity, which is what we call an NCR or not criminally responsible defense here. And now the tapes of the M6 motorway incident were never played in court because she pled guilty. So they didn't have to. It wasn't part of the evidence. And during the plea hearings, the only thing she ever said was no comment. Like she never said anything. So the judge accepted the defense's argument that Sabina had been suffering from something called folie à deux, or in English, shared psychosis, or translated as madness of two, which is, now you'll have to correct me on this because you did a little bit more reading than I did. It's a very rare disorder in which delusional beliefs of one person are also believed by another. So the theory, and this is the strange part about it for me, is the theory that Ursula was under psychosis and Sabina was the one susceptible to the influence by her sister.
Right.
Now, I found that this folie à deux or madness of two is not actually included in the fifth edition of the DSM or the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders because the criteria for diagnosis is considered insufficient, meaning it's just too rare. What did you find about it?
Well, the interesting thing is that the copy of the DSM that I have is the 4, and it is included in there. So it's called Shared Psychotic Disorder, and it is included in there. And of course, they say the same things, that it's very rare. And it's the condition of the person who has almost caught it from the other person, and that it's a shared, that they share very similar delusions. But the thing that I was when I read about it, it doesn't fit for me for this story very well, being that it said that the two people that share the condition will have been very close in proximity, like they will have lived together, shared a space together for a long time, Often they are quite secluded from others as well. So that's kind of just been the two of them for a long time, you know, allowing the one person's delusions to sort of grow within the other person. And I mean, that's not what I'm hearing from this story at all.
No, because if it was 2000 where they kind of went and lived separate lives, that's 8 years.
Yeah.
Of the only contact would be maybe, you know, maybe once a year they vacation together or they talk on the phone and that they're not. It's not like, you know, they say women, when we live together, our menstrual cycles will, you know, those kind of things. That's living together and sharing a lot of space. And it doesn't sound like it's a double.
Yeah, and that can certainly be shared craziness as well. Just like this.
But I don't understand about it is why are they saying Ursula is the one that's under the cycle? Like, there's probably too much to the story that I don't know. But based on the circumstances, if let's say this is something that's triggered by, you know, high levels of stress, it sounds to me like Sabina would have been the one that was under the stress. Because she, you know, she'd left this relationship. Her kids are left behind. But there's maybe more to it that I don't know.
Yeah, there may be. I mean, you say that there was nothing in their medical records or anything like that pointing towards any kind of mental illness. But did you come across in your research any information from any other family members or friends or coworkers?
Nobody could find anything. So the only thing is a little bit later. So, okay, so she's sentenced to 5 years in prison, which, of course, she only served 2.5 years at the Bronzefield Women's Prison. And Justice Saunders, who sentenced her, said, quote, "I understand this sentence will seem entirely inadequate to the relatives of the deceased. However, I have sentenced on the basis that the reason for the killing was the mental illness and therefore the culpability of the defendant is low, and therefore the sentence I have passed is designed to protect the public. It's not designed to reflect the grief the relatives have suffered or to measure the value of Mr. Hollingshead's life. No sentence that I could pass could do that. It is a sentence which I hope fairly measures a truly tragic event." So now Glenn's brother Gary said of the whole matter, "We don't hold her responsible the same we wouldn't blame a rabid dog for biting someone. She is ill and to a large degree not responsible for her actions, but her mental disorder should have been recognized much earlier. I do question the criminal justice system for allowing somebody like this to be let out when she's capable of committing such a crime. Her mental condition should have been properly assessed after what she did on the motorway and the experiences the police had. Her mental disorder should have been picked up prior to being let out into the community. Glenn saw Erickson in distress and was just trying to help. He wasn't slow in coming forward to help somebody in distress. It was his nature. He was just trying to help. He would help anybody. If he saw a fight in the street and the guy was losing, he would help." Okay, so she was released on parole in 2011 and believed to have returned to Sweden, but nobody actually knows for sure where she went. During her incarceration, she never spoke of her sister at all or gave any indication as to why things went down the way they did that day. Like nothing. Like she just never talked about her sister or anything. And from what I understand, for some reason I don't have it written down, but I remember reading that there was a couple of altercations she had in prison as well, but they were, you know, squabbles over different things. But no, like she never had any, you know, a return to the
psychotic race or anything like that. Yeah. And what about Ursula? Has she been followed up on? Like, have people talked to her, and has she been able to explain any of this?
Yeah, she was really, really hard to track down. Like again, I'm kind of going by what's out there on as far as information, and there's very little, and a number of places have tried to track down this information, right? Like people who have access to more stuff than I do, and either the information is not being released. Like sometimes that happens here, right? We're only, you know, we don't get the full story, or just nobody really knows. Like they think that she went back to Washington. They don't really know for sure. And the same with Sabina going back to Sweden. She could be there. She could not be. She could have changed her name. Like, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a very bizarre case. And I do see the slight kind of confusion over why they're calling it that shared psychotic disorder. I mean, I don't doubt that there's mental illness there for sure. Right. But you're right. It doesn't make a ton of sense why they've called it that when it doesn't seem she doesn't seem like she's the one who caught it. She's the one that sounds like she maybe was the one that originated with it.
So right, and that would make sense, except I think the reason they're going with that is because Ursula was the first one to run out into the road.
Yeah.
So it's really strange.
She's just the one who escaped from the grip of the police officer sooner. I'm not.
But when you were watching it, didn't you see that they were just kind of staring? Like it didn't look like they were darting their eyes around looking for an opportunity to run out. They were just kind of standing there. And then all of a sudden, I don't know. But now there are some alternative theories on this case besides the shared psychosis. So David McKean, who's the author of A Madness Shared by Two, says that Sabina's partner might have been in the drug trade and that the twins were under surveillance by Ireland's police. And then that explains the cell phones in their bag and the refusal to give up the bag. But I don't think it really explains anything else.
No, I don't think it does at all. You had me excited there for a minute. I thought you were going to give me something that made more sense than any of this other stuff.
Okay, well, wait, there's more.
Okay.
There's a conspiracy website, Red Ice Radio, that claims that they were the subjects of government mind control program and that the bright colors of the police jackets on the highway set them off.
What do you think of that one?
Well, I think it doesn't explain enough. You know what I mean? It's the same with the shared psychosis one. It explains a lot, doesn't explain it all.
Right.
And you know me, I like explanations that explain it all away. Now, there's the suicide pact theory, right? So they believe that Ursula was the one that was suicidal and that her bond was so close with Sabina that Sabina wouldn't have been able to live without her. And so whatever Ursula did, Sabina's going to do the same as well. But again, Sabina, I think, was the one most likely to have issues of high stress level because she was the one that left behind her husband. So I don't really buy that one either. And then the last one is that there's the alien hybrid theory. Always comes back to the aliens. Both sisters survived the vehicle hit because they're genetically superior hybrids, which that could explain a lot, but it doesn't explain the resting bitch face. Because if you're going to create a truly genetic superhuman, wouldn't you want them to look kind of kind and unassuming, like maybe like Mr. Rogers or Oprah Winfrey?
That would make them more approachable and they might learn more from their subjects.
For sure.
So I don't buy any of those theories. And I don't even know that I buy the shared psychosis one. There's got to be more to the story. That's what I think is there's more to the story. There's more to why they were even there in the first place. You know, what's going on with the ex-husband or boyfriend?
I do feel like we have been left with more questions than we have been answers. Do you have a theory? Do you have a theory that wraps this up much more nicely than perhaps the alien theory? Is that our best one so far?
Right. No, I don't because I don't like theory. Like I don't do cold cases and stuff like that because I don't like theorizing on stuff that somebody knows more. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's an investigative team out there somewhere that knows way more about what happened than we do.
Absolutely.
So everything we're doing, we're just theorizing and all that. But I do think it's an extremely interesting case. I mean, I'm very sorry that Glenn Hollingshead had to get in the way of Sabina at that particular time. You know, that's sad. But it's so interesting to me, the whole story and all the mystery behind it is just intriguing to me.
Yeah, it really doesn't all fit together into any neat little package, does it? Because it's almost like the two events are very different events. The whole
the whole thing with the bus and the running into traffic and all of that seems very different from her killing somebody.
Well, and there was literally no time between the time that he I mean, we're talking seconds, right? The time. Okay, so he's everything's normal. Mm-hmm. He leaves to say, I don't even know how far out of his doorway he got to talk to his neighbor to just say, hey, have you got some tea bags? Mm-hmm. Turns around. So there's no, like, there would have been no opportunity for Glenn to have done anything to, you know, supposedly provoke it.
Uh-huh. Unless she was really upset about not having tea. But that seems a bit of a stretch.
Well, because she wasn't English, remember? She was Swedish.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So he would be more upset about the tea.
As would I.
Right. So anyways, that was the bizarre murder of Glenn Hollingshead.
It was very bizarre. You're right. Well, that is probably the strangest. I think that might be the strangest one you have done so far.
I've done a few strange ones. Natasha Ryan, that was a strange one too.
That one was strange also. Yeah. I still think this one might be the strangest.
I would agree. And I think that that's why this case is just set, like, from the very first time I saw it, like, I'm sure it was a documentary on it. I have to find it. Anyways, it just sat with me because I was like, what is happening? Like, how do they survive? Now, here's another question. Do people that are undergoing any kind of psychosis like that, do they, like, are they impervious to pain? And do they, like, can it behave almost like the way a drug would in your system when it gives you that superhuman?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, a little bit sometimes, I think, when people, like, if somebody's bipolar and they're in a manic phase, mm-hmm. I think they tend to be a little bit like that. Just with, it's like there's this extra level of adrenaline running through the system. And I'm sure that would have been happening with the twins as well. There would have been tons of those sorts of chemicals running through their system. And I'm sure that would have affected their experience of the pain that they were going through. Or, like, I mean, in this whole superhuman strength thing, I mean, we hear the stories about moms lifting cars off of small children. Right. So, I mean, these things are possible. They're just not something that happens in everyday life, but certainly possible.
Yeah. And the other thing that you, like, when you were saying about how this sometimes happens when people are, like, really living in really close quarters, it's so strange that she never asks about her sister.
No, that does seem strange, because they do, when you first hear this story, it does sound like they're two halves of the same whole. Mm-hmm. And then to never even ask about your sister. Yeah, that seems really, really strange. The way it starts versus the way it kind of continues.
Well, and that's the other thing we don't know. Like, we don't know if after Ursula recovered, if she was still distraught. You know, like, if she was saying anything like, you know, why didn't you just let me die? Or those, because, you know, sometimes when somebody is intent on dying by suicide, they don't want to be saved, and we don't have that piece. Mm-hmm. There's so many pieces missing, and I hate that. Mm-hmm. I want to go there and reinvestigate the whole thing, start from
scratch. As far as you're aware, they're both still alive, though.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, they're still alive. So let's see, they were 41 in 2008, so a little bit older. But whether they continue to visit each other after, I don't know. Did what happened with the ex-husband with her children?
Mm-hmm. Which there hasn't been mention of either.
No, and that's a really frustrating part, because normally, like, I accept that I am just a storyteller. I'm not an investigator in any form. But generally, you can piece together quite a bit more of the story because there's some follow-up. And it's just so strange that this is the type of story you would think there would be a ton of follow-up on. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like the story just disappeared as fast as it happened. Mm-hmm. Because it was really hard just to find out what the sentence was.
Yeah. Sometimes there's
things are kept a little bit quiet just in terms of wanting to give people privacy, right? And if they decide that this is a mental health case, then they're more inclined to do that for sure. And then leaving the country from where the crime happens, and then they leave the country. So then you kind of lose the thread there as well, right?
Yeah. It still bugs me. Maybe
someday you'll do a part two and you can follow up and give us more information on it, because I would love to know all the answers to all these questions.
Yes, I do not like unanswered questions. In Canada here, it's frustrating because in cases like, well, let's say if there's a murder-suicide, you never get, you know, any information because there's no court case. So there's nothing to be read into court. There's no released documents. It's tough. And those cases really bother me too, because I always want to know. I always need to know what was leading up to it. What was everybody thinking? What was everybody wearing? What did they have for breakfast? Like, I need to know everything. And so these cases really, really bug me.
Well, this was a tough selection then for you, because you knew going into this, before bringing me into this, that we were not going to know all of the answers to this.
No.
But you were supposed to answer them for me. Yeah. Did you know that? You were just supposed to hear it and go, oh, yeah, well, this is...
Oh, well, clearly it was this.
Well, I really appreciate having you on.
Thank you.
Your insight.
What a fun. The other case that I had asked you to do was, I had wanted one where the person, I guess that was the one you did where they weren't really dead. And at first I thought this might have been the case as well, where the girls run into traffic and they're not really dead. But then you came up with the twist of the story that I didn't know, where there is.
Yes. Yes, I put
poor fellow. Oh, who does it?
Before there is a poor fellow who does end up dead.
I hope his neighbor took care of his dog.
I'm sure he did.
I'm sure. If those were your dying words to take care of your cat, I would take care of your cat. And if we ever do have bodies to bury, you know, we have each other's back.
And we'll certainly do a podcast on it.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm learning lots from doing the podcast.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.